The town knew about darkness. It knew about the darkness that comes on the land when rotation hides the land from the sun, and about the darkness of the human soul. Being in the town is prosaic, sensuous, alcoholic. And in the dark, the town is yours, and you are the town's, and together you sleep like the dead, like the very stones in your north field. There is no life here but the slow death of days, and so when the evil falls on the town, its coming seems almost preordained, sweet and morphic. It is almost as though the town knows the evil was coming and the shape it would take. The town has its secrets and keeps them well. The people don't know them all. They know old Albie Crane's wife ran off with a traveling man from New York City, or they think they know it. But Albie cracked her skull open after the traveling man left her cold, and then he tied a block on her feet and tumbled her down the old well, and 20 years later, Albie died peacefully in his bed of a heart attack, just as his son Joe will die later in this story. And perhaps someday a kid will stumble on the old well, where it is hidden by choked blackberry creepers, and pull back the whitened, weather-smoothed boards and see that crumbling skeleton staring blankly up from the bottom of that rock-lined pit, the sweet traveling man's necklace still dangling green and mossy over her ribcage. They know that Hubie Marston killed his wife, but they don't know what he made her do first, or how it was with them in that sun-sticky kitchen in the moments before he blew her head in, with the smell of honeysuckle hanging in the hot air like the gagging sweetness of an uncovered charnel pit. They don't know that she begged him to do it. They know that Coretta Simons, old Jumpin' Simons' widow, is dying slowly and horribly of intestinal cancer. But they don't know that there is better than $30,000 cash tucked away behind the dowdy sitting room wallpaper, the results of an insurance policy she collected, but never invested, and now, in her last extremity, has forgotten entirely. They know that a fire burned up half the town in that smoke-hazed September of 1951, but they don't know that it was set, and they don't know that the boy who set it graduated valedictorian of his class in 1953 and went on to make $100,000 on Wall Street, and even if they had known, they would not have known the compulsion that drove him to it, or the way it ate at his mind for the next 20 years of his life, until a brain embolism hustled him into his grave at the age of 46. They don't know that the Reverend John Groggins has sometimes awakened in the midnight hour with horrible dreams still vivid beneath his bald pate, dreams in which he preaches to the little missus' Thursday night Bible class, naked and slick, and they ready for him. Or that Floyd Tibbetts wandered around for all that Friday in a sickly daze, feeling the sun lie hatefully against his strangely pallid skin, remembering going to Ann Norton only cloudily, not remembering his attack on Ben Mears at all, but remembering the cool gratitude with which he greeted the setting of the sun, the gratitude and the anticipation of something great and good. Or that Carl Foreman tried to scream and was unable when Mike Ryerson began to tremble coldly on the metal work table in the room beneath the mortuary, and the scream was as sightless and soundless as glass in his throat when Mike opened his eyes and sat up. Or that 10-month-old Randy McDougal did not even struggle when Danny Glick slipped through his bedroom window and plucked the baby from his crib and sank his teeth into a neck still bruised from a mother's blows. These are the town's secrets. Some will later be known, and some will never be known. The town keeps them all with the ultimate poker face. The town cares for devil's work no more than it cares for God's or man's. It knew darkness, and darkness was enough.